Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, you're listening to the Beer Ladies podcast with your hosts, Tandy, Katie, Christina, and me, Lisa. Our website is beerladiespodcast.com, and you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, Blue Sky, even TikTok, sometimes at Beer Ladies Pod and at Beer Ladies Podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to support the show, you can find our merch store link in any of our bios or check the show notes for this episode. And if you'd like to sponsor an episode, please email us at beerladiespodcast@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. My name is Tandy, and we are, we've got three of us today. We've got Katie, Lisa, and myself. And as you might have seen from the title, we are talking about gimmicky beers. You know, the beers are kind of strange. Maybe they've got strange ingredients, or maybe they're abnormally expensive, or they, you know, have something weird about them, or are very high in alcohol. We've got, you know, all of these different definitions of what gimmicky beers might be. And just up front, for any of you think that we're too judgy, of course we're judgy, this is our podcast, but it's actually, we're not going to be dissing these beers necessarily. It's actually just a, you know, a lively conversation about what kind of things work in terms of beer marketing. You know, people have to stand out from the crowd, and whether that's, you know, with can design and branding, look to a future episode for that, or whether it's got to do with ingredients and the marketing hype around a beer. So we thought we'd talk about it and give some examples of, you know, some of the weirder ones out there, and which ones we've tried and which ones we would never go near. You know, why not? So yeah, quick reminder, as usual, socials, follow us there. Website, it's got everything done. Katie, what you drinking?
Like, I already launched in there. Because this orb, glowy orb in the sky these last few days. It's like, where has it been?
I swear to God, don't jinx it, Katie. For those not in Ireland, it's like the first couple of sunny days that we've had almost the whole year. It's nuts.
What do you mean? It has to go back to like last... I was having a conversation with someone and they were like, no, I remember we had one sunny day last October. I'm like, you could be right. I can't remember, but I just know it hasn't. The sun has not shone.
No.
And it has not... A day without rain has not happened in a very, very, very long time.
No.
And now I think we've had two in a row.
Almost. There was some sun yesterday morning, then it went away, but then it came back. So it returned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Could be our summer.
It might be. I think someone said that on Reddit. They were like, well, summer was great, lads. We'll see you all for Christmas. And yeah.
I suppose nobody moves to Ireland for the weather, do they?
I mean, I like it most of the time. It is nice, though, to get the little bit of sun. So,
yes. Actually
anyway.
The weather is actually pretty mild. Like, it's okay. It's just that, gosh, we just haven't had a clear sky or a warm sun for a while. So we're all happy, aren't we?
We are. And I'm like, is this a gimmicky beer or not? I have a Seth beer.
Ooh.
A Seth IPA brewed by the crap people. Brian. Right.
Yes. And Hope. So I think Hope did the brewing.
Yeah.
So, 3.8 hazy and juicy. Is that a gimmicky beer? We can talk about that later. What are you drinking, Lisa?
So I actually also have a Hope beer, only because it's a school night. I have the hop off, the non-alcoholic. But I do have some show and tell beers with me, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but I will show just this this one. So for folks who are just listening, this has a weird iridescent can. It is a Brewer IPA, 8%, and it's got all sorts in it. It's big Swedish haze boy, and maybe I should drink this before Katie and I go to Sweden. Again, we might mention that. But this looks, again, it's sort of, I don't know, iridescent. It has a beardy guy with a hat on it. It's more than a little bit extra, just in terms of, like, we were saying before, the packaging. And, you know, it's this kind of thing. It's like, how often do I need an 8% IPA? It depends, you know, I've got to kind of be in the mood for it. So I think this may end up being one of our themes, is when are we in the mood for something gimmicky? Because sometimes, absolutely, yes. And other times it's kind of a hard pass, at least for me. So we'll get into it, though. We'll get into it. But Tandy, what have you got?
Cool. So also, probably not super gimmicky, but it was definitely the most gimmicky I had, because in my beer fridge, I've got, you know, lots of lagers, IPAs, pale ales. So this one was a bit different. It is Clancy's Can number 11. I've had this before.
Oh,
and it's from Ballykilcavan. And it is a maple and pecan brown ale.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, it is delicious. And I love a brown ale. And this one, you know, with the addition of the maple and the pecan, you know, it kind of leans there towards the gimmicky side. Lovely beer. Not saying it's a bad thing. But yes, it was certainly the gimmickiest that I've got. And because school nights apparently don't worry me, it is 7.5%.
And not just that. Good for you. Yes.
Sorry. Yes, because why not?
I'm saving it for tomorrow. Birthday party tomorrow, so, you know, there we go. That's when we'll push the boat out. But
So, Katie, if we talk about your beer again for a second, the sesh
yeah.
beer, why do you say, or why do you think that could be a bit gimmicky?
Okay, I think this could be a bit gimmicky. Not because of the style. It's a hazy IPA. That's just a style. It's okay. But it's the name, sesh beers, because in Ireland, it's very common to go on a session or on the sesh. And whenever people are like, are session IPAs a gimmick, right? And I would say, no, they are the perfect IPAs to drink on a session. So a session is when you're going for maybe more than one or two down the pub. You're going for an extended few in the pub, and you want a little bit of longevity, so you don't want to knock yourself off with an 8% Swedish can with a hipster right. on it, you know? So being on the sesh or on the session is a common phrase that would be used here, so that's why I think they've totally leaned into that by having the sesh beers. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the question of is it a gimmick or not? I think maybe it's, you know, it's these things, and we'll probably get into this, are kind of cyclical too, aren't they? Because these things go up and down and all around, and something's kind of flavor of the month or flavor or style or et cetera. But I can remember, I want to say this would be about maybe 12 or even 15 years ago, a friend of the pod and past podcast subject, Lou Bryson, championed the Session Beer Project. And this is during that kind of high ABV, high IBU arms race that was happening mostly in North America back in the day. But he was saying, guys, where have all the really nice drinkable lagers gone? All these really, crushable, which is what people might say now, you know, kind of session IPAs. But where are all the things that are kind of 3%, 4%, you know, where have they gone? And so he was, you know, kind of championing them. And I think now, at least over there are more of them. I feel like we've always had more here. Like, because obviously a Guinness is not going to, you know, hopefully blow you away. Unless you're drinking like the four and extra stout of a, you know, many of them of an evening. But it is kind of nice to have that as a category and to see people leaning into it. So maybe if it's a gimmick, and again, we're kind of air quoting gimmick, like it's at least something that resonates with people, maybe in a way that like craft beer, air quotes, doesn't necessarily, but like you say, Katie, in Ireland, sesh means something. So people know, you know, this is not going to be something crazy, but it's something you can enjoy a few of. So it's about how you use it.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I think that there's probably a fine line between understanding your market and you know, trying to shock them in a sense, you know. So for me, the sesh beer is not super gimmicky, but I could see how, because it is unusually named and because it is very niche, you know, again, not the style, but the name of it, I could see why it, you know, might be thought of that way, but why not? But that leads me on, because we can talk about styles a little bit as well in terms of gimmickiness, right? Or, you know, phases that come and go, or things that have got novelty, like mountain IPAs.
Right.
Not many of these ones around, right?
No, definitely not. And that was such a strange moment when that happened. And I'm sure maybe we just didn't get it as much, but I feel like, what?
True.
What even was this?
So. I know. And it's so funny because I've got a few in my head, but I can literally think of one or two from local brewers that make these. So it almost negates my argument that they're a bit of a novelty. But even milkshake IPAs, or, you know, lactose infused anything,
they go
through cycles. They certainly were a bit gimmicky at first. You know, these milkshake IPAs with vanilla and raspberry or strawberry kind of flavors to them, and cold IPAs.
That's what I've always said before. Like, I both believe, and other people probably believe about me, that I should be really curmudgeonly and hate them. But no, I love a cold IPA. I'm like, I want more of this. Just please make more of them, especially as we've got some lovely warm weather. It's perfect for it. So it's, you know, again, we may be, you know, applying this label to something that might have been called something else in the past, but I think we might dive into that topic a little bit too, because, you know, is everything old new again?
It is. It's all cyclical. And I also love a cold IPA, and I don't want them to be a fad. Is a fad a gimmick, or is a gimmick a fad? Are they the same thing?
Ooh, and what leads the other? That's maybe a question. But yeah, like you were saying, Tandy, with the milkshake IPAs, that's a train I've not hopped on, you know, for me personally. I can see why other people like it, but it's, on the whole, not for me. But it is odd how, when these things do come about, you know, there might be one or two of them, and then there's suddenly a ton of them. And do we need a ton of them? You know, I think maybe let the gimmick be kind of unique, you know, do something else unique instead of kind of hopping on the bandwagon. But, you know, as we've kind of alluded to, if there's a trend, you kind of got to get in there to be noticed and, you know, get that shelf space. So it's, you know, it's kind of which, what's wagging what? It's a mystery. So.
And I suppose a gimmicky beer that I don't get, that I think ye get or ye enjoy, is pumpkin beers.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Are they gimmicky?
This is literally when I told my husband that we're going to do this topic, he was like, pumpkin beer. So Ash was like, pumpkin beer all the way. And I was like, well, okay. I have got two thoughts very quickly. One is, I think the pumpkin beers are a lot older than we think that they are, or at least that's my suspicion. I have no evidence for this. Maybe
I'll talk about that, but yes,
perfect.
Go ahead.
So I think that they're a lot older than what we think, and it would have been because brewers would have needed to find fermentable sugars to be able to make beer. So therefore, pumpkin, butternut, you know, any potato, like anything can be, you know, made into a beer. So for me, that's not the issue. I don't like the pumpkin spice beers.
Right. And I'm actually with you on this. And I mean, part of this too is, I'm a bad American for a lot of reasons, but I just don't like pumpkin spice. It's not for me. And it's also weird how it's become bizarrely gendered, and now it's got all this other, I don't know, sort of cultural baggage that, you know, from afar, I'm like, I don't understand what's happening there. But that said, I'll circle back to the, you know, the pumpkin beers. You're absolutely right, Tandy. I wrote an article many, many years ago now about how, you know, they were very much a thing in colonial America, but in fact, even not as much initially among kind of the English settlers. And again, you know, obviously there were other people there who might have been doing stuff with pumpkins beforehand, but we might not have called it beer, but that's a whole separate thing. But actually a lot of the Scandinavian, the Scandinavian settlers in kind of the 17th century are making a lot of beer with pumpkin. Then the English turn up and are making beer with pumpkin for exactly those reasons. You know, they're fermentable sugars. They can do something with them. Obviously, they don't taste like pumpkin spices because they have not figured out what pumpkin spices are yet. That's not a thing. Yeah. So it's purely for the fermentable sugars. And those are the pumpkin beers that I do really like, are the ones that are just made with pumpkin. So yeah, shout out to Trouble for the one we do. That they do here. But like my favorite ones, my favorite American ones, like the Dogfish Head Pumpkin Ale, there's a little bit of that that sort of, you know, spice flavor, but it's really about, you know, making it with the pumpkin and having a couple of other kind of, I'll say, warming ingredients. But I feel like they didn't start to become a gimmick until kind of the late 80s, early 90s. And then there was a whole explosion in kind of the mid 2000s of exactly what you're both saying, like the pumpkin spice. Mm. And definitely, like, I do not want a beer that smells or tastes like a Yankee Candle. That's not not for me. So,
well, you know what? I think I've also just not had pumpkin spice beers that I've liked. I think in principle, I should like them. I like pumpkin spice. I think it's fucking delicious. I love cinnamon. I love clove. I love ginger. I love all the things that go into pumpkin spice. However, sometimes I think that there's too much ginger or too much clove. Like, it's just not really well balanced for me. And then it starts to taste medicinal. And I don't like that. But you know what I would like to see, which would be super gimmicky? I would love to see something like a pumpkin spice, you know, milkshake sour, you know, something like that.
Ooh.
Right? Like,
wow.
Now that would be interesting to me, because the spice could offset the sort of sourness, the lactose adds a little bit of sweetness. For me, that would feel like the right thing, as opposed to trying to make it into almost an IPA base or a parallel base or something. I think you've got to be creative with the base style.
That's interesting. And there was one I used to get all the time in Pennsylvania where they made it. It was actually not with pumpkins, but with yams. And then it was, again, a slightly different flavor, but they did it for something they called Oktoberfest. It was a whole thing. But I know it's amazing. But then, you know, as these things sometimes happen, the more hipster breweries, and I'm not naming names, but people will know exactly what I'm talking about if they're from the area. Sometimes they really trade on those things instead of kind of also getting the basics right. Now, some do get the basics right, and then you can go make the weird stuff. And I think that's really the tell, is if you can make your normal stuff really well, if you make a great Pilsner, you can probably also do the weird stuff well. My suspicion is always, when you're only making the weird stuff, what are you hiding? So how much of this is by design? Yeah.
That's so interesting, because, you know, when I was a little younger, you know, when you get into home brewing, right, it's a little bit of a predictable cycle. You brew your first beer, or maybe your first couple of beers, you think that you are a genius and that you are a gift to the world, and that everybody needs to taste your beers. But so then the dreams of opening up a brew pub or something come about. I promise you, it happens to every single home brewer.
Yeah.
But I actually thought that I'd like to be the kind of brewery that almost never makes the same style twice, right? You know, like, just experiments, because I think I just like the novelty and, you know, like the fact that things aren't predictable. But yes, I think that you have to have the ability to be able to nail it twice. And consistency is a hugely underrated skill in brewing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now that said, I do think, like, is it gimmicky? Maybe this is the question. Is it gimmicky if you're always brewing sort of, like, maybe you have all these base styles, but they change seasonally? Now, I think that's very interesting, where you're using seasonal ingredients. And does that count as a gimmick? Or are you just saying, no, let's lean into what's available and what's local? And I think there's a lot to be said for that. But I do feel sometimes, again, sometimes things might fall into patterns where they start off doing that, but then they have the same beer that they just changed the name of. And you're like, well, what are we... does it count? I don't know. Like, again, I'm like, I'm happy if you make the same beer, but say, oh, this is our fall one that does X, or sorry, our autumnal one and that does X, and we add this, or this is our spring one, we're putting in whatever. Mm. Like, I'd rather have them sort of acknowledge it's the same beer with a seasonal twist. So.
Yes. In the same way that some brewers have made, let's say, the same base style, whether it's a pale ale, IPA, whatever the case is, but change the hop. You know,
I love that.
Okay, well, this is a highlight of some hop. Now, that to me doesn't feel gimmicky, because I feel like that's educational and it's fresh and it's new. Even if it's building on a base, I think that's awesome.
Definitely.
And I love to be able to identify a hop in a beer, because even as a semi-regular, slightly elapsed home brewer, I don't know all the flavors of a hop just, you know, by tasting.
So, and there's always nice stuff that's changing and evolving. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, speaking of kind of using ingredients, there was an example a few years ago of Toast Pale Ale. Do you remember that one? Toast.
Oh, yes. That's been making the rounds again, hasn't it, this past week? So
I think it kind of does. So it goes in these cycles. So basically the idea behind Toast was that instead of using barley and wheat and other grains, you'd use bread. leftover bread, the kind of bread that was going to go into the dumpsters and be wasted. So in a way, it's got a nice kind of, circular economy sort of spin to it. But I tasted it and I thought, okay, well, it tastes like a beer, which is, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
So in that case, is it gimmicky? Probably. It probably sells an ethos more than it does a beer, but that can be fun.
And I liked it when Wicklow Wolf did their collab with Brennan's Bread and they brought out the sliced can.
Yes. And I love the branding on that. That was good. I actually didn't love the beer. It was all right, but you know, it was still a fun way to do it. But I would just love to see more of these. Again, I feel like the toast one I have a bad relationship with, only because the only time I have it is in airports, and it's always because I've missed a flight and I'm stuck waiting, and so it's, I don't know, that's always what's there. So looking at you, London City. But you know, that said, I think it's it'd be really interesting to see people take that and maybe actually turn it into something a little more creative, like do a kvass or something like that, where, you know, if you're looking at a historical style you might have made from bread, like go for that instead of just saying, well, it's fermentable sugar, you know, kind of go that next step, make it a little more, I don't know, creative or even a little more kind of, you know, historical, if you like definitely use those ingredients, but do something a little more interesting with it. That might feel more gimmicky, but I actually feel like it's the more interesting and creative thing to do, and probably all, you know, opens up what you can do with those flavors more effectively than like trying to force it into a pale ale or what was the half can? Was it Pilsner? I'm trying to remember now what it was. It was some kind of lager, I want to say.
It was a type of lager.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because people who are not into their avocado beers, as I've been told, oh, you drink those weird avocados. Because I'm apparently a hipster.
Yes, absolutely. We know. Yeah.
I've come to this realization that I am a hipster. Who knew?
Yep.
Everyone is like, you and the guy, we all knew, Casey.
Yes, embrace it. It's okay. I bought some cargo trousers and I was wearing like a little like vest earlier with it. And I was like, oh God, they're going to take me away to like the All Saints mines. And I'll be like toiling away, throwing shapes.
I told you this, I bought cargo trousers too. But I only bought them because we're not allowed bags at Eurovision, so I need the pockets.
There's no shame.
Practicality.
I think there's no shame in that. I mean, the shame is that women's pants just don't have enough pockets. But anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I think that's cool. Okay, so what other styles do we think might be maybe a slightly gimmicky? Because I've got an article here where this author, who is Rebecca Wyman, this is an old article, it's 2018, but she claims that raw ale could be gimmicky. Zero IBU, which must have been a trend that missed me.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Me too.
No, missed me. Fresh hopping. I thought that was an interesting one.
Interesting. Or wet hopping, a gimmick. Because I feel like it's just the done thing so many places. We just don't have it as much because it's hard to do here. So
no, I feel like it's a little gimmicky. Maybe it is because we're not in a region that grows hops, but hops don't have a year-long season, right? So
no,
there's definitely almost no such thing as wet hopping all year round, or you know, fresh hopping all year round. And the amount of, you know, hops that you're needing for these big beers, and it often comes out, I think, tasting less hoppy than just using dried pellet hops. So I've sort of, this is a weird thing to say, but it's like, I've had one or two fresh hopped beers and I'm like, okay, so
I think you really have to get, and now I'm going to sound like that person, like you do have to get like the Pacific Northwest ones that they make there, because then you really are like, oh wow, this is a whole thing. But of course there's, you know, it is purely that, like there's no, exactly like you're saying, there's no historical precedent for that, because I think Katie, you and I were listening to, I can't remember, Tandy, if you were still there, I can't remember who left when, during Ron Pattinson's talk about the hops, some of these are like 6, 7, 8 years old, throwing in a shit ton of old hops. Like you're not going to get a fresh hop, you know, kind of flavor from that.
No.
I don't even know what you would get in terms of bitterness. I'm sure you get something. So
do you know what? I think the other thing is that maybe I can't appreciate the fresh hopped beer because I don't have a direct comparison where it was just using the equivalent of dried hops.
Yeah.
And I think that's in a way what I need, because maybe my palate is just unrefined, but I just need to taste the difference to understand.
And they do some of those. Yeah, if you're in, you know, Seattle, Portland, there are some of those like events during fresh hop season, and it is really like noticeable. But again, like it's with the good ones, like with some of them. So what? Yeah. It's
I've gone. It's like they do their regular, we'll say IPA that they normally have, and then they'll say right. We have the hops in and we are wet hopping this beer. It's going to be on tap and you can go and taste it. And then you can do a like for like comparison because you know what their regular one tastes like. And I think
that I would smaller appreciate. Breweries,
definitely in Oregon that I've been to. And I'm sure the whole Pacific Northwest do that.
Yeah,
absolutely. But like you're saying, like it's really only something that is even possible in the past, you know, kind of 20, maybe even 25 years. Before that, like you just wouldn't have had the supply chains and you know, all of these things to do it on that kind of scale, and there just wouldn't have been the interest before, you know. Well, people didn't want that, so
it would just be a historical beer in the past, right? Because they would just use those ingredients if they were there, because they couldn't dry them, or well, they probably dry them, but they couldn't vacuum pack them or anything like that.
As we've heard, they might be getting sent around the world, but they're going to sit in bales for years before they're getting used potentially. And that's a very different kettle of fish. So
say they were wet hopping on the frontiers.
Get it in there.
Maybe.
Oh, that's funny. I think it's a good question though, but I also feel like, and I'm not sure if we're on the other side of this trend or if it's coming back up, but like all of the, let's say, I guess there's the broader, like the fruited sours category, but I feel like there were specifically, you know, kind of the Berliner Weisses and the Gozes that had all kinds of things in them, some of which were amazing and some of which are still amazing. And then there's others where you're like, this is juice in the can. What, why? So, you know, again, there's a spectrum. There's really successful things. And then we had some ingredients.
And then you can get gimmick on top of gimmick, because I was in London a year or two ago for Paddy's Day, and I think it was, is it Vault City had brewed an apple sour, so it was green.
Oh god.
And it was apple sour, so there you go. Green beer, is that a gimmick?
Green beer is a gimmick.
Whether, there we go.
Whether it's for Paddy's Day or whether it's just colored green, because there's no way that apples make your beer green,
right?
No. So anyway, sorry, that was just a little segue. You can go back to your sour.
Oh, that's perfect. No, it's a really good one though. Because it's like the whole green beer thing, which obviously we don't have as much of here because it's a bit cringe. But I have to say the one I did have this year, the White Hag one, it was really good. I just had trouble looking at it because it was ridiculous. But, you know.
Yeah, you see, now that is automatically a step too far for me. I just can't. There is a very famous soft drink in South Africa called cream soda. But now cream soda is different all over the world, right? Mm. But in South Africa, it's green.
Right.
And it is delicious, but it tastes like vanilla. It's green. Like, so I can't look at a fizzy green drink and not think of cream soda. So...
Okay. I wonder if I have the same reaction to some of these like very colorful fruited sours again, because where I grew up in the middle of America, our specific cream soda was pink, and it was a very fizzy pink, but I didn't know that cream soda was not pink.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Everywhere, so you know, only much later was I like, oh, this was a very local thing. I didn't know, but I do wonder if that's why sometimes I'll look at like a milkshake, you'd say, you know, a raspberry or a strawberry or whatever milkshake IPA, and be like, nope.
Yeah, maybe
it's, oh yeah.
Whereas I can like sometimes be a little bit of a sucker for lactose in a beer, not as a rule or a principle, but one of my favorite beers that I had last year or maybe the year before that I just drank whenever I saw it, I bought it because it was my favorite beer, was the Turl, and it was a pineapple goza. But it was almost like a pina colada. Okay, so it was like kind of coconutty and pineapple, and it was a little bit tart. It was sensational. I loved that beer. But gimmicky, sure. Like Turl do make like a bunch of beers that are kind of wacky. So
oh, yeah.
I think that fits. But it was
delicious. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and again, one of my favorites of this kind of Berliner Weiss category where they were all a bit weird. Again, going back to Portland, one from Ex Novo, it was called, and I had to look it up to be sure I was right, called Cactus Wins the Lottery. And it was a prickly pear Berliner Weiss, and it was just the most gorgeous, gorgeous thing, especially on a hot day. It was just like so refreshing. Still tasted like beer though, which I think it's maybe for me kind of one of the things it has to get back down to. But yeah. Yeah, because I don't like it. Like I love a good pina colada, and I do love certain beers that taste like heading in that direction. But I feel like because I still have that kind of pineapple-y association with certain hops, that it's still, my brain still says beer. I wonder if that's it or partially.
Maybe.
It.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Because there are certain hops that will give you a pineapple, and Brett will give you pineapple flavors as well if it's not like too old. So there is something about that flavor, and pineapple is my favorite fruit. So there's just, you know, pineapple wins the day for me. But there are now, you know, there are other beers that almost aim to taste like food or actually have food in them. So there is a fairly mild example, Rye River here in Ireland did one. It was a couple of years ago now. It was called Brunch. Did you guys have this beer? Right.
I saw it.
It was a maple bacon breakfast Baltic porter. And it had maple syrup, rauch malt. So that's like a little bit smoked oats, coffee, you know, all of those sorts of ingredients. I had that. I actually thought it was lovely, but I didn't expect to like it.
I really enjoyed that beer as well.
Yes,
really enjoyed it in small doses. Obviously, it's not a sesh beer,
right?
It's no. But it is a lovely beer. You know?
No, and look, being a Baltic porter was 9%. So I mean,
oh, sure.
You know, depending on what mood you're in, you're probably only going to have one anyway. But that sort of thing, you know, it brings me to wonder, you know, these kinds of beers are possibly made to get hype up. You know, it's almost a brewers and marketing kind of Venn diagram where it's like, cool, let's make a fun new thing, let's hype it up just to, you know, energize interest in the brewery or energize sales and things. But I wonder how well that does for brands.
Yeah, especially in the long term. Like, you know, you go into Untappd and you'll see all of whatever the weird thing is. And I'm just going to grab one over here because I've got another one. I've got an Evil Twin beer over here that is, oh, let's see. It's a It's a 7% sour with blackberry, plum, coffee, and chocolate soft serve. And again, this is one of the beers I got in a Christmas box. Like, I am not going to go for this. I'm saving it for the right person to enjoy. Someone at some point will come to my house and have this and love it. It'll be great for them. But I feel like there are these certain things that you go into Untappd and they'll all be rated like 5 stars by a bunch of dudes under 30. And I'm like, what, like, did you actually like it? Like, and what, let's interrogate that. And again, I'm not saying this is not the right beer for someone, but how big is that demographic, I guess, for real? And is it purely, you know, just to, like you're saying, get people kind of excited about the brewery, excited about the specific beer? Because I feel like, again, like Evil Twin, I'm just holding it up, like they have that kind of hype brewery kind of reputation. Is it deserved? Because and I will say, like, I feel like Other Half gets that as well, but when I'm in New York, like if I go for work and I have one of their beers locally, I'm like, oh, this is really good. I don't think these things travel well on the whole. Like, a lot of the hype beers may not. So maybe that's part of it. But, you know, again, it's going to depend on the style, all kinds of other things. But I feel like in a lot of cases that, you know, the hype beer has enough going on that it's hard to maintain far from where it came from. Again, not 100% of the time, but in a lot of cases, is it worth seeking it out unless you're getting it nearby? I don't know. So
maybe it depends on the style or depends on the, you know, the ingredients or something. But I mean, it's kind of linked, you know, this idea of kind of wacky or hype beers with costs and waiting lists. Absolutely. which is a whole thing. I mean, this is very clearly a, you know, craft beer boom era relic. I don't know if we see it as much anymore, but, you know, the idea, like, there was BrewDog's End of History, which was, you know, 650ml bottle in an actual squirrel or at least taxidermied body.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but that is vile to me.
And it was ice box, wasn't it? And then you're like, why? What are you going to do with this?
But it was also 55% alcohol.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Does that even count as beer? Like, I can't see that as beer. For me, that is higher than straw rum, and straw rum's 40%. So, like, come on.
And I think that's maybe that's an important distinction too, because we're talking about a lot of these other things that feel gimmicky, but you get to that is pure gimmick. It's not gimmicky. It just is a gimmick. Mm. There is no reason to make this apart from we're doing this as a publicity exercise. It's not for any other reason. So at that point, you're like, but, you know, I see what you did there, but it doesn't make me more interested in your product. I'm sure there's someone it does, but, you know, again, what is kind of the long term? What is it you're trying to do long term? So, and maybe you're not trying to do something long term. So, you know, also a possibility.
Yeah, well, that's it. But I mean, that one at the time fetched $765 for 650ml. Like, I'm sorry, come on, who's got money to spend that on a dead squirrel and a bear? That's crazy.
I did have one of the other ones, the Tokyo, what was the BrewDog Tokyo, what was it? Again, it was very strong, but it wasn't in a dead animal. But again, that was something like someone said, came up to me at a festival, was like, do you want to try it? I'm like, sure. I didn't pay for it, so it didn't matter. But I didn't love it either. I was like, oh, it's just kind of like, you know, what I assume it would be like to kind of drink lighter fluid. And
I mean, bother? That's it. You know, there's so many different ways to make a gimmick or make a gimmicky beer, right?
Yeah.
And some things, as we've all said, some things are kind of a legit way to do things. I've spoken before on this podcast that there was a brewery in South Africa called Drifter. And during the time that South Africa was going through a water shortage, electricity crisis, nothing's changed. You know, there were a bunch of challenges into, you know, with running the brewery. So things like conditioning and aging the beers for a little bit longer was challenging. So what they did was they put a bunch of crates of beer down into the sea where the temperature is completely regulated and normal. And they came up with barnacles and they were beautiful.
I love that.
And it was actually very special. And yes, they were expensive. They were much more expensive than a normal beer, but it was a Belgian triple aged for like 6 months in the sea. You know, it was just, I felt like that was the right level because they were actually solving a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, doing it in a fun way. They also brewed a goza with seawater because
Salt's right there. Wow.
Yeah, the salt was right there. So in a way, again, that solved a problem, water shortages and droughts and things, in a novel way. I thought that was great. I enjoyed that.
Oh, I love that. And I love too that there's a narrative with that, but it makes sense. It's not that you had to sort of back formulate the narrative, if that makes sense. Like it was an organic kind of thing.
Yes. And I mean, there are so many examples of, you know, we'll share a couple of articles in the show notes of, you know, weird and wacky, gimmicky beers, you know, all the things. But I think possibly one of the better known examples is the Beard Beer by Rogue Ales.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this was literally a beer made with the yeast that came from the brewer's beard. Okay. To be fair, yeast is kind of yeast, so yeah, whatever. Yeah. But it's just kind of strange. I also remember there was a Kickstarter or some sort of concept a few years ago where they wanted to make beer using your favorite porn star's vaginal yeast.
Oh, no, thank you.
Thank you. So I was like,
Well,
what is that going to add to the beer? Like, do you think that you're making out with your favorite porn star? Get on with it. Like,
yeah. Well, at least I know what demographic that was aimed at, you know? So
yeah. It never got off the ground. Here.
but then there's those others, you know, that you do have like, oh God, what's the one where they're, you know, their sort of gimmick is, oh, we've, you know, revived, you know, whatever thousand, whatever year old yeast and we'll do X, Y. Now, some of these I've got more time for than others. Like I love it when they use, you know, like yeast from shipwrecks. Here for it. All excited about that. But like the ones that had like dinosaurs and they had a whole kind of Jurassic Park kind of thing. I'm like,
Jurassic Saison.
It's fun, but come on. Yeah.
So this was a beer that a microbiologist apparently found a yeast DNA in 45 million year old piece of prehistoric fossilized amber.
That was it. Yeah.
I mean, there we go. And then
this is Jurassic Park beer style, big time. Right?
Yeah. Big time. So this is a Jurassic Saison by Fossil Fuels.
Of course.
So they cornered the market on this ancient yeast, according to this article. Now, you see, now that just wouldn't do it for me. Like, actually, I quite like the branding. They didn't need to use the old yeast from an amber. Like, it was kind of cool to just see, you know, a bunch of like beer bottles with, you know, dinosaur skeletons. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's kind of novel on its own.
Yeah. Definitely. And I have to assume, again, only knowing bits and pieces about this, that whatever living yeast you did get is mostly recent, air quoting, yeast. Like it's, you know, even if you were able to extract something from the ancient, you know, yeast, how much could you replicate, et cetera, et cetera. Like I think still most of what you're going to be dealing with, but again, this is my assumption, is a modern yeast in the same way that we haven't been able to replicate as such, like a 17th century yeast or, you know, whatever, because yeast has evolved. There's only so much you can do to go back. So again, that's probably a whole separate, very complicated podcast, but but it's fun.
We did an episode in all the way back in season one about chicha beer, right? And I suppose that was a gimmick, but it was kind of leaning into historical
and I did love methods. The Dogfish Head one, it was really good, and you know, it certainly you know, it was clean. Like you weren't getting, you know, things that people had spit out as such in your, you know, lovely fermented beer at the end of the day, and especially not at that scale, but it was really good. I enjoyed it very much. And I love all of the Dogfish Head ancient ales. I hear from people that they aren't making as much of them as they were. And again, you can argue that's kind of a gimmick, but they're very upfront about saying, you know, we used historical ingredients and methods, but then we do other things to make it appealing to the modern palate, because most people don't want to be drinking ancient beer.
To me, that sounds like brewers having fun.
Because absolutely.
You know, and let's be real, when you own a commercial brewery, and I'm not talking only macros, I'm talking micros, you're generally pumping out the same beer every day or every week, because you need consistency, you need sales, you know, that's your bread and button, your butter. But it's like those creative moments where the brewers are like, okay, our monthly targets have been met, so what can we do that's fun?
Yeah.
You know? And I like that. I think that's really cool.
Definitely.
I don't think it's for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, it's almost a brewer's thing, not a drinker's thing, although there will always be a market for it.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I love that too. Like, and again, it makes sense if this is part of what you do, and then you have other things in your kind of portfolio, if you like. But I do wonder, like, you know, how do you both react? Like, you know, you go someplace you haven't been, like, you want to try all the things that are new to you, but I guess how often is that kind of representative of where you go then? I don't know. I feel like this is something I sort of struggle with when I go places, because again, my example is, you know, I'll go to, you know, anywhere in the north of England, and I'll be like, I will have all of your most boring cask ales to you. And then they're like, no, we have all these things. I'm like, I'm sure they're lovely, but yeah, but I'm sort of getting the thing I can't find. So I wonder, like, at what point is kind of the gimmick too generic, almost, even though it's a gimmick? I don't know.
I think that's a great question, because, you know, when we talk about gimmicks, we're really talking about novelty, right? Mm. So what's novel to you is completely based on what you can access, you know, around you. You know, if you're in beer mecca and you can access absolutely everything, you're going to need some sort of Jurassic Park yeast beer to actually catch your attention or to stand out. But when you're in Ireland and there's not that many brown ales, man, a brown ale sounds great, or a dark mild, or something on cask, or, you know, whatever's local, I think sounds awesome. But now, I wouldn't call those gimmicks. I would just say that they're, you know, novel.
Yeah. And I suppose if you're moving on from, I suppose, styles, do you call punny names gimmicky or names gimmicky? Because, I mean, you could have the same beer in like 7 different cans with different names.
Oh, that's fun.
Named differently. And I'm wondering, what would the sales be like if because I recently bought a beer called Europhoria IPA, because it's from Tool, and I might have it on the podcast next week, because we might be talking Eurovision. And I bought it because it said Europhoria IPA on the can. And it's like, how many people go out and do that and will go, oh my God, this, the name and the marketing and the branding appeals to me. So therefore, what's in the can itself is kind of secondary. And yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be really good, but it is secondary, you know?
Oh,
what do you think
about
that?
I have bought some shockingly bad Star Wars themed beers in my lifetime. Just, and I know I'm being, you know, targeted, and I understand that what's happened here, but that's the trade-off. And I think my success rate on those is, I want to say it's like 1 in 20. It's really low. But I mean, every time I'll do it.
I bought that Iron Maiden beer. It's from England, and I think the brewery consulted with the lead singer of Iron Maiden, who's got many, many talents, and they made this beer, but it was literally like Iron Maiden branding. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. It's like not a great beer, but I was completely sold by that. I've been sold by many a Saison, because I'm a sucker for a Saison. I'm always sold by like just interesting branding. And if things come in a pack and they're like, you know, you can see that they're cohesive as a set, I'm like, oh, that, like, I'm a designer. It like makes me very happy to see a beautiful set of cans or bottles or whatever the case is. Sometimes names get me. Today I bought a beer called Lush, because I just thought that's a nice name for a beer. It's by Galway Bay, so I'll try that later.
Very good.
Lovely. Yeah. Oh, plenty. Such a consumer, I admit it.
and punny names.
Mm.
Do we remember our favorite punny named beers?
Oh gosh, I'm sure I've got a bunch.
Why not?
Okay, I think too untapped. I'm sure it's like it's all in there. Let's see.
Oh, I've got one for you. It was called Chugwork Orange, and it was also a tool. Go figure. And it was actually oh my God, it was the most amazing beer. But you see, again, this is not for everyone, but this was kind of like, you know, like a milky lollipop, you know, like an icy, like a milky iced lollipop thing.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of weird fizzy orange, but it's kind of creamy. It's got a bit of vanilla, but it's also a sour. Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. They said it was a cream ale, but it's not a cream ale. It was like orange, vanilla, creamy, fruity, sweet. Divine. But it was called Chugwork Orange, which I thought was cool. If only they'd had the eyelashes on the can. That would have been cool.
that would have been cool.
Oh, I love it so much when you lean in to the marketing, or yes, when we lean in and we are pleasantly surprised that the beer is also good.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
But I mean, you do, you start your journey with your eyes. You don't start by the taste or by knowing styles. So like, you just need to be drawn to a can. And if something in there sounds good, oh, strawberry, I like strawberry. Why not?
Yeah.
Or maple pecan. I like maple more than I like pecan, but that's cool. You know.
No, I like maple and pecan.
There we are.
Yeah.
Do you like a pecan tart?
Yeah. Oh, I do. Yes. Yeah.
It's my least favorite of the tarts.
Pecans. When I was pregnant, I craved pecan nuts. I'm one of the kids. That's a very weird. It's a very healthy craving, I suppose.
Yeah,
in a way.
I was gonna say that's very like good for you, probably. So,
but
I crave pineapple. So go figure.
There you go.
You know, I've only recently like had a switch flip in my head, and now I'm super into pineapple, and I don't know what that was. So I just have like severely low vitamin C or something. I don't know, but like I'm suddenly really into pineapple. So
I'm just gonna blame hormones. I blame them for fucking everything.
You know,
so
absolutely. Although here I am, like again, I'm scrolling through like Untapped, you know, notifications and check-ins. Like, how many beers out there are called Gimp Mask by now? Like, I'm just like, come on. Like, you know, there must be hundreds of them, and you know, I'm sure everyone thinks like they were really clever to think of it, but
although I don't feel sorry for people trying to name beers, because gosh, there's like so many of the same names all over the world, and I mean, you just have to go to Untappd to go and have a look. But if you had to go to Untappd with every one of your ideas, probably they'd all be taken, and then you'd feel despondent and just name it lager. You know, like,
or
I don't know,
that can work too.
An AI beer name generation engine that also looks at Untappd, is hooked up to it, and just goes, okay, this one hasn't been named before. There's a few here. I like Ship-Faced.
Oh, very
Ooh,
good.
Good one.
That's a good one, especially, I suppose, IPA being associated with shipping in a way.
Yeah.
You know, weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, very nice.
Very nice.
Another one, Bites the Moss.
Less cool.
I mean,
it's a good pun, but it doesn't sound like a good beer.
Yeah.
Copyright infringement.
Love that. Love.
That's funny.
I think you can just put hoppy like in so many places. Hoppy. You can use these phrases in so many ways. I want to dance with somebody.
There's so many of those.
Lots of yes, with wit. There's so many things, but
yeah.
You know.
He ain't happy.
Okay, that's a good one.
I love that one. And I do love a lovely happy vice.
That is good. Yeah. No, I'm still trying to find a really good one. Like, I mean, again, for me, I kind of go for the ones where it's like tied into a location or something historical to do with, you know, kind of where the brewery is from. But equally, I love the ones that are just weird, but have their own kind of weird vibe. Like Verdant, everything they have has, you know, has a vibe. And I love that they're just like, that's their thing, and they're, you know, they do that, and then they have some that are like very specific along those lines, and I'm here for it. I think that's great. But again, like Ballycliffhaven, naming things after different fields and, you know, different things to do with the farm, I think that's wonderful. But I do like it though when they are just kind of funny. Like I like I guess I don't know if this counts as a pun or not, but like how Bullhouse has Frank the Tank, but then they finally made a less hazy one, and it was Frank the Dank, and I was like, I like that they're just, you know, building a series, and I thought it was really sweet that they're just saying this is already our thing and we're making it more our thing. And so I don't know if it counts as a pun, but I liked the leaning into the nomenclature, if you like.
And I think
we could lean into it
and get our listeners to tell us what is their best, their most favorite gimmicky beer. What gimmicky beers have they drank and went, oh my God. And what punny beers worked out well and what punny beers did not work out well, or what branding has pleasantly surprised them. I think we all want to hear their stories and find out what should we be looking for.
Indeed. And I mean, we'll deliberately exclude things like, you know, misogynistic nonsense. You know, panty dropper, that's nonsense.
No. Yeah.
We've spoken about it before. We'll probably speak about it again because it's about time we revisit, you know, after season one. But I mean, no, none of those, please. But there's so many fun things in beer, and beer is fun. Oh, that's actually what I wanted to say earlier where I forgot. But like, I even think, and this will be controversial to some, but I even think that something like Session IPA is a bit of a hack, because what's wrong with calling it a pale ale?
I've had this conversation back and forth, and again, like when we get into like some weird stuff, air quoting, is like just historical. Like back in the day, they were throwing all sorts of weird things into beer just because it was on hand. Again, we talked about pumpkin, but like oats, mm-hmm. we've seen, or you know, certainly yep. corn. What was it that Ron said as well? Like they were just
oysters.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Everything. So.
Oh my gosh! If this one was to be believed, goose poop to make beer. Yep. Good times. And whale testicles. Smoked with sheep dung.
No, thank you.
Yeah. No. Good times. Good times. Not sure I'm super into that, but it is interesting. I think your level of what you consider gimmicky or not is, you know, completely subjective.
And it's always evolving.
We'd love to hear.
Yeah. We'd love to hear. And I think maybe too, it'd be great. Again, thinking about those of us here in Dublin, I feel like there's, you know, maybe everyone's got enough of a stash of weird stuff that maybe they would like to share, that we need to have like a bottle can swap somewhere at some point, you know. We used to have some great ones in Philadelphia. And again, I've got these things sitting in my kitchen that I don't know when I'm going to get to, but I'm sure someone would love them and it'd be great to kind of trade. And maybe also throw it out there to the listeners. Should there be some kind of semi-organized bottle and can swap? Tell us where you do it. So, you know, definitely
we used to have something like a rare bottle tasting party meet thing.
Yeah.
You know, we'd go in on like a group buy where we'd buy sort of, you know, from South Africa now, slightly more expensive or more inaccessible beers, but as a group, so that you weren't, you know, sitting with the 750ml bottle in your
room. Exactly, yeah.
And that was awesome. It was like six people, you know, you'd share the cost of your six beers, so it would still be expensive, but, you know, relative. And you'd go for the tasting and you'd all, you know, if you really wanted to practice your BJCP, you could go make your notes or you could put into Untappd. It was just like such a fun little nerdy beer sesh. I love those, but yeah. I think that's kind of fun. It's like have a, you know, wacky beer day. It's not wacky hat day, it's wacky beer party.
Yeah, whatever. Absolutely. And I love the idea of sharing them so that way everyone can have that small bit to say, maybe this is for me. Ooh, maybe not. But, you know, they had a little bit and, you know, they can give it to someone else who's got a glass and carry on if it's not for them and vice versa. Everyone will find a thing they like.
Mm, definitely. Well, friends, if there's nothing more to add, we'll invite our listeners. Send us your best weird gimmicky beers. Send us your best puns. Send us the things that you like that everybody else thought was a bit of a fad. Send us whatever you want. Like we're keen. We'll, you know, repost on Threads or not really
wherever
on Twitter anymore. So wherever we are, we'll give you a bit of a shine. And so it was lovely to have you both talking about wacky wacky beers.
Oh.
Everyone, see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.